Hello and welcome to SwissInfo.ch's surreal programme for December the 14th. I'm Thomas Stevens. A glass-shattering note from a soprano is one way to get people's attention. Later, we'll hear about the long and lyrical life of Switzerland's Lisa de la Casa, considered one of the greatest singers of her generation, who has died aged 93. But first, one of the greatest artists of her generation. Merit Oppenheim would have been 100 next year, and to mark the centenary, the Kunstmuseum in Bern is putting on an exhibition showing how contemporary Oppenheim's art and ideas remain. I asked Michelle Laird, a Swiss art journalist, whether it was fair to call Merit Oppenheim, who died in 1985, Switzerland's most famous surrealist.
Yes, she was not only the most famous Swiss surrealist, but she was possibly the only Swiss surrealist, and certainly one of the only females that was attached to the moment and who carried through the spirit of surrealism way beyond the movement and into the 70s and 80s.
How did this young Swiss girl become an internationally famous artist? Was she just in the right place at the right time? Or?
Precisely, and I'd say almost by accident, because she was very young when she went off to Paris. She was only 18 years old and immediately met Giacometti, who introduced her to the surrealists. And she came up with this iconic fur-covered teacup, which was immediately branded the ultimate object of surrealism when she was really still so young. It was acquired by the MoMA in New York. She shot to instant fame, but in fact that fame was really quite terrible for her because just having to live up to it. So just a year after she did the teacup, she retreated back to Switzerland and for the next 15 or 17 years did nothing truly artistic anymore. She was emptied, if you'd like, of her creative juices. So it was only when she moved to Bern in 1954 that it started to come back. Obviously, over those years where she did nothing, she was still working on all the elements that were going to come out in her art later on, and that continued then to build up her reputation. So when you say she's the most famous Swiss surrealist artist, she was, but only much later on.
I mean, she worked and was innovative much later in a wide range of materials. She painted, sculpted, took photos, made costumes, wrote poetry. Is it possible to pick out her strengths and weaknesses, or doesn't it work like that?
I know. I think that's precisely what makes her so interesting, is that she was inventive in every single material that she happened upon. Interestingly enough, she was a restorer for all those years during which she was not an artist. So she worked on other people's art material and acquired the skills of working in different materials. And perhaps this is what later was going to contribute to this fascinating exploration that she had in every possible material. Very often she'd look at something and imagine something else. One of her most famous pieces later on was a pair of upturned white shoes that had been trussed like a chicken with those little feathery paper cups at the top. And that has been perceived as a highly erotic sculpture. In fact, what I find interesting about Merit is that there is this latent eroticism, but it never is lewd, and it's never really pornographic or too provocative. So we're really talking about a woman who was very uninhibited, both in her body and in her art. You may remember that she was the muse for Man Ray's very, very famous series of photographs, which is completely naked, and it's called Erotique Voilée, Erotic Veil. So she was not only, as I mentioned, uninhibited in her way of life, but this inventivity was then very, very present in all her artwork later on.
And how about her legacy and her influence? Does she still have an influence on contemporary artists?
Very much so, perhaps because very early on, she was one of the first who introduced the whole idea of performance art. There was a famous meal that she organized where the food was placed on a naked lady to be eaten off the body of a naked lady. So we're talking about the premises of performance art, but all her sculptures also are very much like installations. Now, that's not to say that she's been imitated, because I think that's one of the interesting things also about Oppenheim. You cannot imitate her. She's working in so many different forms and different fields. There is nothing that can resemble something that she has done. Now, in Bern, the exhibition Merit's Sparks has attempted to show her influence in very contemporary Swiss artists. But what we discover is that they haven't done anything like her, but they do work in her spirit, which is, again, conjuring images in our own unconsciousness. We look at one at their works and we say, this is very bizarre. There's a huge element of the bizarre in everything she does, as there is in the artists that we see in Bern.
Kathleen Bühler, curator of the Merit's Sparks exhibition in Bern, explained what the museum was aiming to do.
We didn't want to do another retrospective, because that's what we did in 2006. But we thought, how can we prove the relevance and the freshness of this work? How best can we prove it? And then we thought we would invite five young artists, Swiss artists living in Switzerland, who also work in a very surreal way, so that the sparks and the dialogues go in between two generations, because these young artists could be grandchildren of Merit Oppenheim, and also that to prove the continuity and the value of her work and of her thinkings.
With my eye on some last-minute Christmas shopping, I wondered whether Oppenheim's work was collectible.
Merit Oppenheim is a connoisseur's artist, and everything she made became like an instant icon, and therefore, because of the rarity of what she did, of the appeal of the nature of her work, yes, her pieces are very valuable, and the prices with the retrospectives and with the centenary are going to continue to rise.
Michelle Laird. Merit's Sparks runs at the Kunstmuseum in Bern until February the 10th. Exhibitions will also be held in Vienna and Berlin throughout next year. Is it possible to be too beautiful? There was a danger that the stunning beauty, to quote the New York Times, of Bern-born soprano Lisa Della Casa, who has died aged 93, would distract audiences and conductors from her effortlessly graceful voice. She once said that Herbert von Karajan had heard her sing and immediately asked her to sing Wagner's Tannhäuser with him, even though the role, Venus, called for a dramatic soprano or a mezzo, and thus was not at all appropriate for her voice, a light lyric soprano. "He told me I had just the right kind of sexiness to make a splendid goddess of love," she said, turning down the role. Her Liz Taylor meets Vivian Leigh looks meant Hollywood also came knocking, including for the film version of Tolstoy's Anna Karenina, but in vain. Here is an excerpt from the glorious aria E Susanna non vien from Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro. This recording was made at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York in 1958. Lisa Della Casa was born into a well-off family in Bergdorf, near Bern, in 1919. Her parents, both musically inclined, encouraged her to pursue an opera career, and at 15 she began vocal studies at the Zurich Conservatory. She made her debut in 1941 in the title role of Puccini's Madame Butterfly at the Solothurn Biel Municipal Theatre. Only 2 years later she joined the ensemble of the Zurich Municipal Opera House, making her debut as Annina in Richard Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier. After the Second World War, she moved on to the more prominent opera stages of Austria. She appeared first at the Salzburg Festival in 1947 as Zdenka in Strauss's Arabella. After hearing her premiere performance, Strauss himself said, "The little Della Casa will one day be Arabella." He was right. Arabella became her signature role, which she performed hundreds of times in opera houses around the world. Arabellissima was the headline of her obituary in Zurich's Tagesanzeiger newspaper. In this 1954 recording, Della Casa, as Arabella, sings Aber der Richtige. She's holding out for Mr. Right. According to musicologist J.B. Steen in his book The Grand Tradition, 70 Years of Singing on Record, Della Casa in her Strauss roles displayed a wholly appealing kind of fragility, tender and unmannered. In an opera world notorious for outsized egos and rivalries, her diva colleagues openly admired her. The Tagesanzeiger pointed out that, as glamorous as Lisa Della Casa was on the stage, she was anything but a self-promoter. Her sense of humour comes across in a 1963 interview with the BBC. And check out her extraordinary habit.
You must have sung Mimi dozens and dozens of times.
Yeah.
How do you make it sound so fresh?
That's my secret. That's...
You're not going to give it away. No, but seriously, I imagine sometimes you must get tired with singing a role if you have to sing it very many times.
Yes, it can happen. If you sing often, often, all the time, you can be tired, that's true. For instance, once... Arabella, I probably sang 80 times already. But then my husband came and he said, you know, now it sounds like routine. You have to be careful. And then I need a cigarette. I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
You smoke, then?
Yes, I smoke.
I thought great singers never smoked. Isn't it very bad for you?
You know, once... In Vienna, I went to this famous singer doctor and I asked him, serious, give me the answer, is it dangerous to smoke? And he said, you know, gnädige Frau, the singing is more dangerous than the smoking.
Good point.
And I smoke longer than I sing.
Her fans were shocked and disappointed when, at 55 and at the height of her career, she abruptly announced her retirement in 1974 after singing her last Arabella at the Vienna State Opera. She then retreated with her husband and their daughter, who was often in poor health, to their castle near Lake Constance. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Read more about these stories and other Swiss news and views at swissinfo.ch. I'm Thomas Stevens. To play us out, this is Lisa Della Casa singing in 1963 Porgi Amor from The Marriage of Figaro. O love, give me some remedy for my sorrow, for my sighs.